Welcome to another episode of GEQ Speaks, your go-to platform for insightful conversations, captivating stories, and thought-provoking discussions. GEQ is a series of experiences, and we're just making sense of that as we go along. That is what we're doing here, one conversation at a time. So sit back, relax, and let's dive into our episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 21 of GEQ Speaks. I am your host, or not really. I'm Omar Shahab, class of 2024. I am here with my two friends, Aya and Yata. We'll introduce themselves in a minute. This is just going to be, you know, a conversation by and with graduates to answer all your pressing questions. So, without further ado...
Hello, everyone. I'm Aya Hassan. I'm class of 24 and I major in CULP. I'm also a very active member of African Student Association and Black Student Association. You might have met me through my job at comms where I try to bully people into being in our next B-rolls and stock pictures. I apologize for that. And if you're interested, we have a shoot next week.
Can I join? Hello, my name is Yeta. I'm a graduate from the class of 2023. So that means I graduated more than a year ago. Time does fly.
How does that feel?
It's bittersweet.
Yeah.
But since I'm still in Georgetown now as an employee, it feels like Georgetown never ended. But at the same time, it's kind of weird for me to go through the halls and the atrium thinking that I'll run into some of my friends. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I might have just gone a little bit crazy in this long day and I'm not going to see anyone. So I might go back to my office and to my work. With that being said, I majored in international politics and minored in economics and Arabic. I was the only Albanian student during my 4 years of Georgetown. So that was quite of an experience and allowed me a lot of space to move around, be involved in different things, in different clubs, in different initiatives. Currently, I've been working at Georgetown at the Office of Finance and Research Compliance since June 2023 as a full-time employee, but I was also part of the office as a student assistant since my freshman year. So that office, just like Georgetown, has literally been home for the past 5 years of my life. And I'm excited to be here today.
That's really cool. Okay, now I'm a little jealous. I'm going to say something too. I am a history major in the class of 24, which makes me one of four people.
One of the rare ones.
I'm also an international student, which is kind of weird because everyone just expects me to be a local for some reason.
But you do act like a local. I don't know what it is about you.
Please, let's unpack that because I need to know what it is.
You're also Arab. I think it's people kind of just assume that if you're from an Arab nationality, then chances are you are a local.
Mm. Fair enough. But yeah, it has not made my getting to know Qatar any easier because, you know, people just assume that, like, you know, you're way around and I was so lost in my first year here. But yeah.
We'll unpack that in a bit.
Yeah, we will unpack that. But that's kind of why we're here. You know, we've gotten so many questions. By the way, before we get into it, guys, like listeners, as well as Aya and Yata, fair warning, I am going to be exploring these buttons throughout the duration of this podcast because I am so curious what they do. And this might be my only chance, so fair warning.
Can we please take turns?
We can, definitely.
Perfect.
But, you know, without further ado, we've gotten a lot of questions from the Georgetown students, from fellow Hoyas. Some of them who have just recently joined Georgetown, incoming freshmen. And, you know, there are a few questions about what it's like to transition from, you know, high school or... as an international student, maybe, you know, your home country to this GEQ experience, which is, you know, pretty unique, I think, as colleges go, pretty particular. So, you know, let's just start. What do you guys, how was it for you, you know, transitioning? Because we've got like, we've got an international student and we've got a local, we've got three different backgrounds. What was it like for you coming here?
I mean, for me, it was, as I said, quite of an experience. And what I mean by experience is that I went through a lot of changes. First of all, the cultural context is very different from where I come from. Albania is a fellow small country, but located in the Balkans. I did not know much about Qatar apart from the main things that it's an oil or sorry, gas-rich country. It's part of the GCC. The World Cup is going to take place there. What I also knew was that there's a lot of malls here, that it's super hot during the summer. There's a lot of AC, a lot of migrants. And I have to say this very apologetically, but the other piece of information that I was told that I thought was good to know is that it's not a war-torn country. Now, for a lot of people from other parts of the world, my perspective before coming might seem too ignorant, which it is, but it is because the two countries do not have a lot of relations with each other. So we do not study a lot about GCC or the Middle East overall. So before coming, I had a very vague perspective of where I was going, but I did know about Georgetown. So that gave me some kind of assurance that if an institution like Georgetown has decided to open up a branch in Qatar, then the country must be as cool as the school. So that's what brought me here after an attempt of 2 years of applying to more than 28 universities, primarily American universities, with the big challenge of not being able to secure a full financial aid. As for most of the international students, that being the challenge, Georgetown thankfully opened up the door for me. When I came in the beginning, I would say it was way more smooth than I had envisioned it to be. In terms of cultural shock, I thought I'd be shocked by the practicing of religion, about the constraints, about the conservatism. But I wasn't, because I didn't see it affecting me as much as I thought it would. And I was able to live a very normal life, maybe being even more free than I was in Albania, because there I had a lot of people knowing me, but here I was literally no one. I didn't know anyone in the country, so I was able to start a new page and completely reinvent myself. So in that regard, it was beautiful. It was scary at the same time, because I came from a public national high school, one of the biggest three in Albania, with more than 2,000 high school students.
Wow.
So that compared to Georgetown's body of 400 students max per year, it's quite of a difference. And the capital, Tirana, in itself is a very vibrant city in which there's a lot going on for the students. There's Olympiads, theater competitions, national debates, everything you can think of is happening. And because I was president of the school government, of the student government, I was involved in a lot of these projects. And I came from being super active, kind of like, quote unquote, a popular kid, to again being an absolute no one who has no idea what is about to unfold, because I had never been in such an international environment before. And that humbled me quite a lot, because I was used to being someone who would just go into the streets, run into people that I would know, go to a certain institution, always know someone who can help me out with something, kind of learn how to navigate the system on the go, but also have backup support. Whereas when I came here, not having been in touch with international schools before, and particularly US systems, I found myself lost. And that was due to me not being able to ask for help in a lot of times, because I was shy to do so. I have to very openly admit that. Sometimes it was also because of inferiority issues. Again, seeing my peers coming from international baccalaureate schools, from the AP program, from some of the best international high schools in the world, I would always think to myself, how am I going to catch up with these guys? I literally was Jon Snow, not knowing anything, not even writing a paper. So there were a lot of challenges. And as you mentioned, being an international student, you also come with the burden of being away from your family. And being the first child who left the family, that was another layer of responsibility for me, by having to keep in touch with them all the time, kind of updating them with what was happening with my life here. But I didn't know what was happening myself either. So that was a challenge on its own.
That's a good way of putting it. Like, you know, they want you to update them. Like, I felt this firsthand. Like, they want updates, but you don't even know what's going on.
Yeah. I feel like that's part of that alienation process, the first semester, to the point of one of the questions we received on how to transition from high school life to university. I would say one of the biggest challenges, and for everyone who's going through it now or has gone through it in the previous years, it's more than okay. You're literally reinventing yourself. You're leaving what's familiar and what's known, even if you live in Qatar, to be honest, because it's a different stage of life. But taking care of the human inside of you while you have to be a student worker, a friend, a student leader, a group or club participant, and all the possible roles you can take as a Hoya, you have to prioritize that human inside of you. That's the biggest challenge. The rest, there's 4 years to take care of. Yeah,
it'll come. Yeah.
Yeah, I think like also like because the question specifically asks how to transition from school life to uni life easily. And if there's one thing I would say about this is that it won't be easy. And I think the first step is to acknowledge that it won't be easy. Because if you set the expectation that it's going to be smooth, it's going to only make you struggle even more. So
that's a good catch, actually. You're right, yeah.
So I think initially you just have to know that it's going to be a process. It's going to take you a while to figure it out. And you're not alone in it, because that's where the imposter syndrome comes in. And I think I faced it the most because I saw people that came from the same school, for example. So they already came in as friend groups and they were just existing, you know, so smoothly. And I was like, why am I struggling? Mm. It's just a huge part of it is to accept the fact that even if it doesn't look like it, everyone is going through it somehow, you know.
For sure.
You don't need to feel inferior or feel like everyone else is going through it easier than you are. Everyone is struggling in their own way, and it's part of the process, you know. Being lost, not knowing what it is, being humbled into it. At the end, it is a very different stage of your life. I call it the rebrand because that's what happened to me. I was a very different person in high school. I'm a local, so I went to a Qatari schools. So I still came from a very different environment from everyone else. I studied in Arabic my whole life. So I, even when I came in, just writing papers or academically at least, I used to always think in Arabic. And then suddenly I had to function in English all the time. And I think that is where I saw the gap, you know, because the econ, microeconomics was my first economics class in my whole life. My personal statement was the first thing I ever wrote in English. So I saw people who kind of had ideas that were coming to them so easily. And I was like, did you have this curriculum before? And I didn't. Like, what's up with it? But you get on your feet faster than you think that you would. You know, like I first month into Georgetown, I remember thinking, I'm like, there's no way I can do this. I don't see myself ever, you know, digesting, processing and like engaging with information the same way I see other people do. But it really does happen faster than you think, you know, once you just, because at some point you have to do it. That's the thing. It's not an optional thing. And saying don't stress about it is not realistic. You will stress. You will struggle.
But it's okay to stress.
But it's okay to stress, you know. And it's not like the stress will ever go away, but you'll just learn how to manage it. And that's when things start becoming easier.
And I think the earlier you go through that stress, the better it
the
is.
Better. Mm-hmm.
And also one thing you kind of lose sight of in the beginning is that although some other people might have themselves together, to put it in a polite way, in terms of academics, they might have other issues. They might not be comfortable in this environment. They might not be able to make friends. They might have their own personal family issues. They might struggle financially. You don't know what it is, but nobody is having a perfect smooth ride. So it is very important, in my opinion, to know that you're not the only one having or going through a challenge, but you should also feel very grateful about the kind of challenge that you're having, because it might be way easier, not easier necessarily, but more simple to overcome by having the right tools, finding the right tools and the right people to help you overcome whatever you're going through. We've talked about the paper trauma together before, and I absolutely resonate, because anyone who did not come from, I guess, one of these IB schools, or to be honest, I don't even know how many good high school systems are out there. I just know about national curriculums, and many of us did not write a paper. And I remember my first paper to write was for my writing 015 class with Professor Ferhat Oruç, and he had to return that first paper to me 3 times because I couldn't get it together. For some reason, I could not understand the concept of an academic paper.
Yeah.
And my biggest fear when sitting down to read for classes like philosophy or theology was, am I even going to be able to retain any of this information when I go to class? Because I had to translate words on the go from English to Albanian to sometimes understand the main thesis or the main argument. But guess what? From that, you go to maybe an honors thesis or a certificate where you write 60, 70, 100 pages of your own. And you're like, my God, that is some progress. So another thing is, Georgetown does build you up. So you should not think that just because you are not on the same level with these other people, at least academically, in terms of writing skills, or I don't know, they have looked into your academic credentials. They know that you have what it takes to level up with other people, to catch up with the rest of your peers.
There's a reason you're in.
There, absolutely. Yes, yes. Yeah. Even if you don't have the dough ready, they're going to work with you a little bit. You're going to take the right classes, going to go through the right failures, and you're going to catch up. It's unavoidable.
Yeah, like accept it.
Yeah.
Just let it happen. Yeah. And I think one thing to also say is, we talked about how humbling it is. So one thing I would say, assume you know nothing. Because no matter how much you think you know, no matter how easily high school came to you, you know, how easy it was to get A's, it's not the same. I'm not disregarding how difficult high school might be for some curriculums or some peoples. But at the end, it's a completely different workload. And what makes it different is that there's no one running after you telling you to do stuff. If you don't do it, you're screwed. And then that's it. You know, it's on you. And it's a very big responsibility to hold. And I guess that is what makes it a lot more difficult. I saw someone ask about heavy procrastination and workload in the first year. And I think that is what makes the transition a bit even more difficult.
I mean, I liked what you said earlier about accepting that it has to happen. It's going to happen. So you might as well work your way through it. And yeah, like, you know, it's a very... Georgetown and college in general, it's a very different kind of experience than high school. It's not just the workload, it's reinventing yourself, it's growing up, it's being an adult. And there's, I think that the thing with procrastination, and I felt that, like I've really felt it, is that you want to get away from like the possibility or the idea of not doing it. You know, I think that's where it stems. I'm sure there are like a lot of other, you know, reasons, I don't know, psychological, biological, whatever it is. But I think, you know, as college students, we just really want to get away from it sometimes because it's heavy. It's a heavy load to bear. What's worked for me personally is just taking whatever it is, like it could be the academic workload or it could be the, you know, the fact that I have to get out there and just do stuff. It could be chores. It could be just, you know, getting a life, you know, building a life as an international student. Just trying to make it my own thing, making it fun, making it something I want to do. Maybe like having some elements that excite me about it. You need to desire it. You need to want it. I think that's what's worked for me. Yeah.
Another thing I think, even with procrastination, at least what the reason I suffered with it is I was a perfectionist, and just I had the stress of it has to be perfect and it has to be an A, and I have to impress the professor and I have to get on the same level as everyone, made me push back doing it because it just becomes a very difficult task that it's not that I do it, I have to do it perfectly and I have to get that perfect grade. And if one thing I would say ended, and then I would end up not doing it, you know, because I'd be too scared of the process or what the result would look like. And what I would say would help is that you need to walk in with the mentality that yes, an A is nice and do your best at it, but at the end, the point is do it.
You know, just do it.
Just do it.
This is not sponsored by Nike.
Yeah. So, like, you don't have to just... it's good to want a good grade. It's good to have the ambition to, you know, for that A. But if you put this much pressure on yourself, you will end up not doing anything. And you just need to realize that it's a learning process, you know, and that's just part of it. Especially, I would say, with, like, your first paper in a class, for example, your first assignment. Your professors understand where you are at more than you think, you know.
That's true.
They gave you that assignment for a reason. They know that this is the level that you can handle, and they know that it's something achievable. They would not give you something that you would not be assigned an assignment that is so crazy and impossible that you need to kind of, you know, sit in a dark room and think about it for weeks.
Oh, and please, sorry to interrupt you, but please, go to office hours.
Yes.
Please talk to your professors. They don't bite, I promise. Not all of them. And when they send you back, like, feedback on your papers, read it. I spent, like, 3 years not reading what, like, they sent back to me.
One thing I would say, even if they don't send you back feedback, ask for it.
Ask for it. It's so helpful. It will change your academic life.
Yeah, and I feel like we are lucky because we are on a lot smaller class size. So you get to have that personal interactions with the professor. Like, a professor would actually remember who you are and remember what assignment you submitted and what you talked about.
Exactly.
You know, so it's not like the professor would be like, oh, wait, let me pull it up. What did you say your name
What's
was
your name again?
Yeah. You know, so chances are, as you build up and submit, like, you never have a class where you submit just one assignment, at least very rarely. So they understand. One thing I learned is that a lot of professors look at how much you progress rather than just what you submit, you know.
Yeah.
And because I submitted a lot of papers that I thought, like, this is it. This is my A. You know, this is my 99 out of 100. I did great. And then I'll be humbled so fast, you know. But I also have papers that I'm like, this is the worst thing I ever wrote in my life. I'm too embarrassed to even submit it. But then I would end up doing a lot better than I thought.
Yeah.
I took international relations in my sophomore year with Professor Anatol Levin. And I remember it was COVID time, so we were taking the class online. We had one of the lectures to read for the day. It was some IR theory. I apologize, but I don't remember it. Let's blame it on COVID and not me not being attentive to the lecture. But I remember he would write the lectures himself, and he would put it up on Canvas. We had all to read it before class. And in the end of the third page, he wrote, stop here. Don't forget to get a biscuit. Don't forget to feed the cat. Get another biscuit, maybe also some milk or tea, whatever you prefer. Now you can go back to the lecture. And it has stayed
That's
with
nice.
Me. It's I think it's one of the coolest lectures I've ever read. I don't even have a cat, so I ended up just having biscuits and taking a moment for myself. But it's a good reminder because when I used to look at professors in the beginning in the classroom, I would kind of feel their authority, mm-hmm. of their knowledge, of their experience, but even them as human beings, of, you know, being older people who have gone through some things in life. And I would think that I cannot access them because I don't have their experience. I don't have their knowledge, their expertise. So I feel
shouldn't talk to them to
go and tell them that while you might have written 30 books for the past 10 years, I'm struggling to write my first, second or 10th paper. And we sometimes forget that they've been in our age as well. They've been college students too. They've been PhD students for a decade of their life, maybe. So they know what it feels like to be hopeless and miserable. And some mm-hmm. of them are very open to admit that in class. Yeah. But even for those who do not admit that or even acknowledge it, know for sure that deep down, they understand that this is a process. And it might happen to everyone that you're not always on your A game. There's so much happening. Again, I don't want to disregard that the same happens for local students mm-hmm. and for the Qatari students, but I can speak more for international students, knowing that, again, you have to cook for yourself, clean after yourself, do chores, do groceries, have to go and save up and buy clothes for an event or an internship.
Yeah.
Come and do your student job if you were lucky to get one that semester. Go and do an internship. Go and do another, I don't know, event or initiative, and then go to classes. But I would say that's the beauty of it. And yeah. I think what helped my procrastination is multitasking, mm-hmm. engaging myself in a lot of different things, holding way many more eggs than I could in my mm-hmm. basket. Ended up breaking a good deal of them, but made good omelets in one way or another.
Because, that's what it takes,
yeah,
you know?
It built me up.
Yeah.
And when I realized that I can get outside of my box, I can get outside of my comfort zone, and I started seeing the benefit of that. You know, one semester you get better grades, another semester you might not get those exact straight A's or A minuses or whatever is a good grade in your opinion. To me, anything that, you know, let's say it's above a B level is good to go.
C has got degrees.
For sure. But if you don't want to feel like you're missing out,
yeah.
needs even a B plus gives me the honor I want to live by. Mm-hmm. But that being said, if you do at least one thing per day that makes you feel better, I think it's a win. Mm. If the only thing you did today is feed the cat or grab a biscuit, as Professor Levin would say, I think it's still good to go. You will be able to catch up tomorrow because you know that you cannot escape it tomorrow, because if Sunday comes, you have to submit that paper or problem set by the deadline. Another thing is surround yourself with people who will call you out
for your
procrastination.
Pick your friends wisely, definitely.
Absolutely. And that's not very difficult to do in a small campus like ours. You know who's your tribe, you know who are your people. And more or less, considering how much of a competitive environment it is, I think everyone is trying to like kind of do things, kind of get along with their tasks. But again, have one or two friends who will remind you that you are wasting your time and you should get yourself together. I think planning on my calendar has worked out very well for me. Mm-hmm. I would always put the deadlines, you know, not just incorporate them through Canvas, but even for like small reflection papers or even for a talk I would want to have with a professor to check up on my progress, let's say every 2 or 3 months, I would put it on my calendar because it kind of reminded me that if I have to go to that meeting with that professor to ask about a question that might not be academic related, but about a certain internship or a paper or even something I'm curious, I have to be prepared when I go and talk to them. Not necessarily write a paper about the thing before I go to them or watch every single documentary out there, but
know about it.
Have a structured thought, opinion, or question before talking about it, because it's not about the impression you will leave on them, but it's about the benefit you will get out of the conversation.
Yeah.
And I would say the same thing has helped me with my mentality towards my jobs as a student assistant. As I mentioned, I worked at the Office of Finance and Research Compliance, but I was also a peer tutor for quantitative methods for a year. And you know, before preparing your lectures to go in class and tutor fellow students, you have to get prepared. And to be honest, for me, it was easier to get prepared to help others than to prepare for my own self to go to class or to go to the meetings.
I relate so much.
And, you know, I have had friends of mine who became very good in certain classes because they started helping other friends of them. Mm-hmm. And that reassures you that you know what you're talking about. And if such mechanisms do help you to get out of your bed and do things, do them. It's worth it. And always clean your apartment, please.
Absolutely.
Please.
Oh, that's so... Yeah, actually, I just want to reiterate two things you said because that's actually so helpful. First of all, always clean your apartment. It gives you such an energy boost. It makes you feel so good. Do it. Just do it. Even if no one's going to see it, do it. Second thing, small tasks. Small tasks, again, like it makes you feel so good about the progress you're making, even if it's a tiny task, even if it's just your laundry. you'll feel so much better afterwards. You're going to want to keep getting shit done. And third thing, what was it?
You said two things.
Oh, no, helping your friends. Yeah. Okay. Helping your friends. You have no idea how many times I thought something was like, not even that it's hard, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I couldn't. I was so like
stuck.
Kind of, yeah. And I just can't bring myself to write a sentence. And then my friend is like asking, like, what do you think I should, how do I go about this? And suddenly I just can't stop, you know,
Ideas are
full
flowing.
Of ideas. Yeah. So yeah, like cooperate. It doesn't have to be something that like, you know, is not, you know, shouldn't be done or like in papers or whatever. Just, you know, have thinking sessions, have brainstorming sessions.
Also about papers. It's okay to write a bad paper.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like every class you take, you're going to have to be an expert on that class.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, again, freshman year, some people knew about colonialism and Edward Said's books just like it was a holy scripture. I had never even heard of it. And I would be like, either I cannot think and I've never read the book in my life, or they're just different. And guess what? After getting that degree, I think they're just different. There were classes like, I don't know, things that I enjoyed, like security studies, international politics, comparative political systems, things in those lines where I did great. I did amazing, past my expectations. Or even migration classes, which I kind of minor. I joke around that I minored in Professor Garrett because I took every possible class of hers and did my thesis in migration as well. But econ classes, man, it wasn't my game.
Yeah.
I started majoring in econ. So I think I'm one of those, not to boost, but like it's just extra hard work that I did, guys. It's not, again, to say that I did good. Don't do this, please. But I took 9 out of the 11 econ classes.
Wow.
And I dropped out 2 classes before completing the major. And then I switched to IPOL and completed IPOL while having done an Arabic minor of 36 credits.
You switched that late?
I switched in my junior year.
Wow.
Second semester of my junior year. It was quite of a challenge. I had a lot of fights with Dean Mood. He thought I was going to be a lost cause. But thankfully it worked out. But again, like, not every class has to be your best class ever.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just, you know, you're not compatible with the vibes or the class or the professor or their way of teaching. So there's a lot of factors that you need to take into consideration when judging yourself on how good or bad you did in this particular task. But again, no cats to feed because we're not allowed to have them in the dorms. A lot of biscuits to eat for free from student life or wellness. Take advantage of that.
Actually,
I feel like going and stealing something from student life.
Oh my God, guys, they give out so much food. It's good food. It's always good food. Or fruits, like, wellness.
Eat that apple every day.
Eat it.
That wellness apple.
Yeah. Yes, eat it. When you graduate, you're going to miss that apple so much.
Yeah.
Eat it.
It's like having your grandparents on campus.
Actually,
you know,
yeah, that's so true.
Eat an apple, please.
And it's so nice because you don't even have to interact with anyone. Yeah, you just walk in and it's right there by the door. There's always like apples and bananas. You just grab one and leave.
One.
No one would even see you.
Yeah. Also, go to peer tutors. Go to peer tutors because they will understand where you are stuck and why you are stuck, because they've been with you in class or they've taken that class before. They've talked to the professor. They've talked to Samreen and all the other experts. So they are there for a reason. And I tell you this also from my perspective of having been a peer tutor for a year. I was super shy my first year to go to Masa and the other peer tutors that were older than me when I was a freshman. But then I realized, like, the last thing I could do is judge these students, because I understand that that particular concept sucks. No one wants to, you know, sit down and learn about this thing. But I feel like students can also explain things to you on a more simple, pragmatic way. It will kind of give you the essence of what you need to know to get you started. And then you are good to go on your own together with the help of the professor or whatever other source of knowledge you want to use. But
absolutely.
Take advantage.
Because they explain it like students.
Yes.
Like, they don't explain it like academics or researchers. Like, they explain it as someone who, you know, they've completed what you're trying to do.
Yep.
So I guess the point here is, guys, please make use of all Georgetown resources because they're actually so valuable. Peer tutors, wellness.
Writing center.
Apples, all of it, really. Like, it's, we're so privileged as Georgetown students to, like, have all this, you know, available to us. It makes such a difference. If you're, like, if you even if you just want to, like, need to talk to someone or whatever, go to wellness. They're so helpful, you know. Just give it a shot. It's not weird. They'll give you a banana on your way out. Just do it.
Omar, the thing is, on this topic, at least when I was a student a year ago and a few years ago, there's a lot of different sentiments on how people feel about the help they can get from our different departments, the people in the administration. And I am absolutely confident that not everything works for everyone. However, I feel like, although there might be many things wrong from other people's perspectives, everyone has their own, you know, sentiments based on their personal experience. I feel like there are a handful of people in our administration, in every department, who are open to listen, to hear
That's
you
the thing,
out.
Yeah.
And if you are not okay with something, with a certain service that is being offered, with a certain approach that someone is showing towards your situation, talk about it.
Reach out.
Just reach out. Look, nothing can be perfect. And this system, just like any other system in the world, be it education or labor or healthcare system, not comparing ourselves to NHS, but, you know, just like any other system, has its own flaws. And it won't get better for the people who come after us if the people who are here
Unless
now
you make a fuss.
Won't do something about it.
Yeah.
But also something else about the Georgetown culture. And I don't want to generalize, but I've noticed this a lot. Don't fall prey of other people's opinions. Just because someone might be saying all sorts of things about a certain professor, a certain class, a certain person in the administration, a certain group of students, do not take it for granted. Go give it a try yourself.
Absolutely.
And at least make your own opinion about it. If someone tells you that, oh, I think this professor is absolutely brutal in the way they deliver feedback, maybe there's some more nuance to that conversation.
Yeah.
And you have to go and try it for yourself to be able to come up with an idea or an opinion about it. So that's another big takeaway.
Definitely, definitely.
Create your own perceptions and have your own opinions.
Because I've gone through this so many times. And if it wasn't like just for the fact that I've accidentally like taken Professor X or Y before people started telling me about them, I probably wouldn't have taken them. But then because I did, I know that, like, you know, there is much more to this than meets the eye. And, you know, some of these professors ended up having such a major impact on my academic trajectory and even my personal beliefs. So just experience all that you can by yourself. Don't, it's all available. Just make the most of it, I think, you know. And this is coming from someone in terms of, like, the resources, as I was saying before, like, this is coming from someone who didn't use any of them for the first 3 years of Georgetown. Not even kidding. Writing center, wellness. I don't think I even took those, like, fruits in my first 3 years. I'm so serious. Like, just try it, you know? It's not, even if you think, like, I used to think that it could be a waste of time, or I didn't think the writing center could really help me. I thought I'll just use my own voice and papers. I didn't think wellness could help me. You know, I'm not having any issues. I'll just, like, power through myself. It's silly. You know, if you do have that perspective, that's fine. But you don't know what that experience is like in the first place. You can't judge it before you do that, before you walk through that door. So just walk through as many doors as you can. Professor's doors, wellness, writing center. Writing center ended up being one of the major resources that I used for my honors thesis. It helped
me
so much.
Fighting over who's having their hours with asthma first.
Yes, that's so true. That's so true. So yeah, you know.
Yeah, and on resources, I also want to say one thing. As much as it's important to not let other people's opinions affect your experiences and whether you experience something or not, I would say one of the most important resources are your fellow students.
Wait, that deserves a...
they're going through the same thing you're going through. Some at different paces, some at different levels. And when I say your fellow students, I'm saying that because I've been seeing it recently how now batches are kind of tending to stick with each other. Like they only interact within their class.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important to, we're a small campus anyways. There's not that many of us. And really, you can say, yeah, you can do it alone, but do you want to?
Yeah. Why?
Do you want to go through your college life alone? Even if you can, because I think that's like the main part about, or the biggest part of being a student is
your peers. For
your
sure.
peers, you know, you're not the only student. You're part of students. Like for example, I was I spent the first years of my college life relatively alone, moving solo. You know, yes, I would say hi to people in hallways, but I wouldn't say that I had friends. And then around end of my sophomore year, that's when I became part of a friend group. And it was a relatively big friend group on campus that I would say had a very loud presence.
We can confirm.
And
shout out outside area.
Shouts out outside area. And what the thing with that group is that not all of us were good at everything, you know. Some were good at history, some were econ geniuses, but sucked at history. You know, my thing personally was culp and anthropology classes. Like, that was my thing. You want to talk culture? I got you. You know, I will tell you how to structure that sentence of critique of society. But having that group and being able to learn from each other and have these conversations at lunch break, not necessarily about things that you are learning on in class, but just generally about the socioeconomic state of the world.
Like the most random
the
topics
most
ever.
Random like, topics of what is happening. A war started in my country. Oh, my country is having a revolution. Oh, I hate this system. You know, that it's not that it helps you directly with the content of your classes, but it helps you formulate ideas and opinions.
Gives you perspective.
And debate.
Gives you perspective. And you learn how to think.
Yeah.
I cannot count the amount of times that I had ideas that I thought were solid beliefs, but just after talking about them over lunch break or in the movie room with my friends for like 10 minutes, I'd be like, like maybe I wouldn't admit it, but like you're actually kind of low-key right, you know? And that is very important because then it reflects on the way that you think academically, you know? Mind you, not everyone was born an academic. And even when you come into Georgetown, I wouldn't even say you're in full academic, but you pick that up based on, it's a reflection of your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs. And then what Georgetown teaches you is how to think about things or formulate these ideas in an academic way, you know. But learning how to think is something that you don't only pick up in class. You pick it up in your interactions with people. And it makes things easier for you, you know. I always was terrible at any econ class, you know, but going to a friend and then them saying, oh, let me dumb it down for you, you know, always helped.
Yeah.
You know, do your problem sets together. Yeah. Let your friends read your papers. You know, yes, go to the writing center, go to your peer tutors, but always let a fellow friend read it.
Yeah.
You know, they understand. Whether they have taken the class before or not, they also think as students, you know. So and you will miss out on a lot of things when you write a paper, because especially when it's a long one that you've been working on for a long time. But your friend will be the person that will spot a spelling mistake out of pettiness to be like, ha, that's wrong.
That's true.
You know? So this is not a journey that you want to go through alone. And having friends and peers is very important.
And it's fun.
It's fun, exactly. Because that's what you end up remembering. Like, yes, you have friends in middle school and high school, but your friends in college are the ones that you will relate to the most and the ones that you are most likely to, you know, be friends with afterwards.
But it's also about those 4 years in itself. Like, I think our batch had around 48 nationalities.
Mm-hmm.
About 45, that's for sure, but something between 48 to 52. And some of the nationalities that were present in our batch, I'd never met people from those countries before.
Mm-hmm.
So when I would sit with them in the atrium, to be honest, I didn't necessarily have the best impression of all of them because I didn't really know them. And I also tend to kind of ride solo until I find my tribe and I stick with them. Not to say I don't merge with other people, but I choose. I try to choose and be very selective. But that was the good thing about Atrium. And that's why I loved it as a space, because during lunchtime, I would see someone that maybe I wasn't friends with, but I hadn't given them the benefit of the doubt to become more than acquaintances. Yeah. So I would have heard a certain opinion they had in class, and I would just go and ask them, can you tell me a little bit more on what you think about that? Because I don't know much about this topic and I'm curious to know more. And in many cases, I had no idea what their country looked like, their economy, their GDP, their, I don't know, social status, their revolutions, their entire historical and cultural context, right? So I would just sit down and ask them a very simple question, which I have turned kind of into a mantra that I do with people when I meet them for the first time. What does your neighborhood look like?
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Can you describe it a little bit?
I like that.
Because I think of it in the perspective that when you travel to a new country, especially if you commute by a bike or a bicycle, you're constantly looking around at how people walk, how they're dressed, what that's their pace of moving around. Are they chit-chatting? Are they slow? What are they eating? How they're looking at each other? Are they loud? Are they very loud? And these are takeaways that I love hearing from people because they're insiders. Mm-hmm. So even if they're going to describe a revolution to me, they're going to describe it from the perspective of someone who is either the child of someone who's been part of that revolution or a grandchild, or they might have been there themselves. Uh-huh. Or they know the language and they can give you way better primary sources or secondary resources than I could ever find in English and Google helping me out, or even ChatGPT. But for my bad, ChatGPT came out during the last month. So, you know, we weren't blessed with that gift. But for me, that was a blessing because through that, I managed to have a connection with people. You don't necessarily need to be friends with everyone or best friends. You are kind of friends with almost everyone because you share classes, jobs, events, meals, and so on. But let them be more than acquaintances to you because everyone who comes here has been chosen for a certain reason. Yeah. And respect that in the same way that you would want others to respect that about you, that you are a representative of something. And what I like the most out of the people that I'm friends with, and I'm still very close to a lot of people that, you know, I was good friends with during those 4 years, is that I don't think about my friendship with them just as, okay, those 4 years in Georgetown, we had a good time, that's about it. I think it's a lifelong kind of investment because tomorrow day, there will be places. And I am a deep believer that everyone will be doing something super cool.
Yeah.
Because they have the mentality of a go-getter.
Yeah.
They came here for one reason or another. I know for a lot of people it's the financial aid, but it's amazing because that means that they've moved a lot of stones before stepping on this one and taking advantage of the opportunity. And they will be somewhere where they will be doing something cool, innovative, creative, in a leadership position or whatever it is. And those are the kind of people that I want to be friends with even in 20 years down the lane. I always joke with my friends that, when I become the prime minister of Albania, I'll give you a call. And if you are an expert at the World Bank on, I don't know, fiscal policies, you know that I barely passed micro. So I'll ring you up and I'll ask you for advice. Will you give it to me? And they're like, yeah, you got me Karak so many times. So, you know, I got to give it up to you. So, yeah, think of people in a good way as a long-term investment. These are companions of life you will have, not just like college friends that you went with. And plus, they've seen you in your worst days more than your family or your other friends ever will, especially for people who pulled all-nighters or lived in the dorms or stayed, you know, around campus until very late. So you gotta love those people and invest in those relationships.
They know too much.
Don't risk it.
Yeah,
and it hits you sometimes. You'd just be hanging out and I'd look around and I'd be like, I can't believe that these people are the next leaders of the world.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they are.
That's the thing about Georgetown. Like, you know, I don't even mean this in an elitist sort of way, but more like it attracts this sort of person because it's not just the name Georgetown, it's the type of person. I think you know, despite our differences and like within the student body, I think it's pretty clear that we do have a common factor. Like we're here because we're driven by some sort of personal reason, you know, a personal mission. It's very diverse. I've seen the, you know, between students, it can vary hugely.
It's an mm-hmm. actual spectrum.
Yeah, literally. But everyone wants to do something. Everyone wants to change something. Yeah. We're not here just because we wanna. It's not just a matter of learning or expression.
Yeah, or getting that degree.
Yeah, it really isn't. You know, like people really wanna get the steps in to know how I can accomplish X or Y.
But it's also the environment. You know, I feel like even if not everyone comes in with that leadership perspective that, oh, I don't want to take up this role, want to work in that club, in that institution, student club, sorry, or with doing an internship in a certain institution, you grow that along the way. Because again, you start taking smaller steps, you see that it's fun, that it's kind of cool, and then you want to do something else and then something else. And I think that kind of answer is also one of the other questions on how to get the most out of the Georgetown experience while you try to be excelling academically, but also living the full student mm-hmm. life. And I don't think these two things are mutually exclusive. You don't have to miss out on the student life experience because you want to maintain that academic excellence throughout your 4 years. Again, it's a very relative, subjective thing, in my opinion. For someone, a GPA of 3.2 might be a major accomplishment.
Yeah.
For someone else, if it's not a 4.0 or a 3.999, then, you know, their 4 years were wasted.
Again, you've disgraced your ancestors.
No gold medal? Oh, my God. Just drop out already.
Yeah.
But there are ways to work around it. And a lot of the things that we've mentioned so far, I think, kind of answer to that question intuitively. Get out of your room, clean your room. So get out of it after you have cleaned it. Try to get a taste of everything.
Yeah.
All the clubs, even if you don't feel like they're not for you, that you have a very solid opinion, as I mentioned, that this is not for me or this is my stance, you never know. It might humble you. Or it might make your day by making you feel super good with yourself and confident that, hey, I knew about this thing and I managed to contribute it to this. But another thing I would say from my own personal experience, so I wasn't the most vocal person on campus. I wasn't super engaged when it comes to student clubs. I did participate in 2 or 3 of them, I think. I did attend a lot of events, but I wasn't that much into taking up a leadership role because I was more interested into getting work experience outside mm-hmm. of campus and inside of campus. But one advice I would give is think outside of the box. Georgetown as a building is not the only venue in which you can enjoy your student experience. I know of other peers in my batch and other batches who have gone to build their own startups, their own companies, their own nonprofit organizations, and utilizing and applying the skills and knowledge they got inside campus in other parts of the world by also engaging their other Georgetown fellows in their entrepreneurial activities or initiatives, still making the best out of their student life, because you don't have to excel in the same venues as everyone else. If someone is the, I don't know, president of a student club, you don't necessarily have to be the president of another student club.
That might
not
be your thing.
I was never engaged with the student government inside school, but I did deal with the residential student government in the dorms for 3 years. A lot of people on campus don't even know that that exists as an entity, but it caters to around 800 or 900 students in both male and female dorms. And I think that has taught me the basics of public policy, because Qatar Foundation is a very bureaucratic institution mm-hmm. in which you have to be a lot of patient to very patient to deal with, but you also have to learn a lot about how to move around things to understand nuances and contexts of protocols and policies. Yeah. And I learned that in Georgetown,
but practice.
I didn't have a venue, or better to say, I didn't come across my favorite venue to apply it in Georgetown, but I managed to apply it there, and I wouldn't have it any other way. So think outside of the box.
Yeah. And, you know, building on that, I'd even go a step further. You were saying that, like, they're not mutually exclusive. Just by your own story, it occurs to me that not just that they're not mutually exclusive, I'd go a step further and say you can't really do one without the other.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I feel like if, you know, those experiences like yours and with public policy and the residential government, others and like the conversations we've had outside of the main entrance or your internships or whatever it is, I don't think it's possible to attain the academic excellence that you want at Georgetown if you're not going to engage with other people or like with practical experiences. I think that's a necessity, you know?
Yes.
You can't really go without that.
On that point, I just want to share briefly a personal story on public policy and thinking outside of the box. It's been around 4 years that I've co-established a nonprofit organization in Albania called Youth Center. And what the nonprofit basically does is that it serves as a bridge between the Albanian young scholars and the Albanian academic diaspora. The first thing I did with the NGO is gather a group of people my age and ask them, do you know what a paper is? And they're like, obviously no. Do you know the difference between, I don't know, scientific and academic research or social science research, better to say? And they're like, no, not really. And I'm like, well, I happen to take a couple of classes about that, and I'm interested to see if I can kind of establish a program in which I can share what I learned and we could do something together. Well, because I took scopes and quant in my fourth year, but I took writing classes in my first year, since my sophomore year until now, there's been more than 500 young Albanian students who've gone through the program.
Because
I took scopes and quant, and I learned the value of knowing about social science research. And trust me, it's not A-level Georgetown student kind of papers, because I'm pretty sure, you know, here we have the right tools to bring us to that academic level of excellence. But I managed to apply it. And maybe that's another venue that a lot of people can take. Maybe there is impact you can make outside of the building, not necessarily just inside of it. So it doesn't exist exclusively. You need one for the other.
Exactly. And if I could build on how you can apply it as a point, when I came in at Georgetown, I had an idea of what I wanted to do. And I kind of knew that what I study at Georgetown academically does not align with that. And based on that, I kind of did my academics as if I was forced to. It's something that I just have to get through and then power through it until I can like skip forward, graduate, and start doing what I actually want to do. And I thought that because I'm not studying exactly what I'm interested in or what I want to do, then it's completely useless. But it's a degree that I have to get. And I would say, so for context, like what I want to do is more arts, culture, heritage, museums, studies, art history. And I was like, a politics degree does not play much into that, at least career-wise. And then one thing that I quickly learned when I started working is that what you learn as a student is not about the information that you learn. It's about learning how to operate, how to think, how to kind of... Every skill that you gain as a student is a skill that you can apply to any other discipline that you can think
Absolutely.
Of. Absolutely. Regardless of whether it's...
They're transferable.
Yes. Regardless of whether it's the exact same thing or not. Yes, you might think that studying politics is not something that is very applicable in the real world, you know, based on what you want to do. You think that if you don't... Because a lot of people, I see them, they simplify studying politics into becoming a politician or a diplomat or working in an embassy as if that is the only route you can take.
Which is weird to me.
Rarely the case,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's weird to me because if you think about it, like just looking back at like the politics classes or just the Georgetown classes that we've taken, and really, I don't think it's about the politics of it. I think... It's not really about the theory. It's about, you know, making a case, or it's about thinking. It's about arguing. It's
and
about
understanding.
Understanding, absolutely. And like these skills are so easily transferable to so many other fields. Mm-hmm. you know, of course, you can do that in politics, but I think most of all, it's building you up as a person and then allowing you the tools to navigate anything else. I think that's the point. And I think really, like, that's what politics is about. It's not really, it's never really about politics. It's just, you're just, you know, talking about something else all the time, most of the time.
And like, what we study is everywhere. And at the same time, we study a lot more than politics, you know? I might say maybe there was a point, like, when we were freshmen where classes were a bit more limited. But as we got closer to graduation, like, I noticed that you can... There are, like, four professors that teach film. Professors that teach art history. Even the anthropology classes. You can study film, you can study music, you can study culture, you can study art. So there is always a way to learn about what you want to learn about.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think I had any interest in politics. But I somehow, like, professors always allowed me to pursue what I want to pursue. You know, I was the person that would make an IR class about, you know, art trafficking, you know. And just push for what you want to do.
You can shape it.
You could shape it. And professors actually allow you to pursue that. I was very clear from the very beginning that this is what I'm interested in, you know. And yes, it might sound systematic. It might sometimes you will have to do it exactly the way that it is, especially in your core classes in your first couple of years.
But you need those core classes.
You need those core classes because they give you the skills to be able to pursue what you want to pursue.
What you want to do. Yeah, exactly.
But we also have people in Georgetown who have taken very interesting paths. Like, I know people who are doing minors in maths, in statistics, in data science, in law. Like, there's ways around things, not only with you taking classes in other campuses in Education City or going to main campus or to the campus in Italy and taking classes that you're interested into, but even here... I learned very late about the concept of tutorials.
Yeah.
Where you can go to. I learned about that in my spring semester, senior year, that you can go to a professor and actually design a class with them. So please do not make the same mistakes. If anything, ask around how people are doing their things, because there's so many things you can do. And also research.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many opportunities right now for you to do research as students, go to conferences, co-author papers, have them published.
The funds, the experience funds.
Yeah.
There is an entire office dedicated to student research right now. And even if you do not take all the classes you want in the topic that you're interested into or that you'd like to expand on further in your master's or PhD studies, you can publish papers, you can write papers, you can join the UREP program or any other program in which Georgetown allows you to enroll, and you can build your portfolio. And even if that does not lead you to where you want to be, you have so much more experience and insight in a certain topic. Maybe it could be useful for a job, for a next internship, or if nothing, it just gives you perspective on what you enjoy more and what you enjoy less. So again, just think, you know, think creatively. It doesn't hurt. Although we're a rigorous school with a very rigorous system, I think there's a lot of leeway for creativity.
I agree. And even though, like, there's a lot that can still be said about this, you mentioned how well this can be placed into jobs and internships and practical experiences. And this is actually sort of a hot topic with the questions. You know, we have people asking about... you know, how many of us are employed or on, you know, advice on finding jobs, what jobs are recommended with a Georgetown degree or with an econ major in specific. What do you guys think about that? It's not an easy intro because, you know, a sad truth here is that the job market sucks. but I think, you know, Georgetown, I think, you know, one thing we've seen with our classes is that many people have just gone to other places, and there's a real flexibility with what you can do with a Georgetown degree.
Yeah.
So what has been your experience so far?
Well, for me, it's been a long journey with my kind of, let's say, professional experience, not the full-time one, but at least with being in the job market. I took a gap year before coming to Georgetown. Even during high school, I was doing a student job, and then I took a gap year doing a full-time job. When I came here, I was engaged in a lot of internships and student jobs as well. I graduated with, I think, 8 internships and 4 job experiences, which to me was good because it made me develop a lot of new skills that I didn't know I had to learn. Burnt me out for most of the time because there was a lot going on, a lot of things for you to handle at the same time. But it gave me 2 main perspectives that I'm very grateful of. First of all, is that I developed work discipline. And I realized that you're not always going to love what you do, especially at this age. You are might be lucky with ending up in a straight line where you immediately get what you want and you kickstart your career, but that those are very few cases in which that happens. So it prepared me that most probably what I get first thing out of college is going to be a station, not a destination right away. So yeah, work discipline, learning how to suck it up and move on, because that's what happens in the adult life apparently. And secondly, it taught me how to narrate my story. So not all the internships that I've done when I was a student are highly relevant to what I want to do. Just to give a small, like a small example, I want to study public policy. I want to enter that field, gain expertise, enter state making in Albania in like 20 years down the lane and so on and so forth. Build up my NGO into a public policy and research institute in the next 5 to 10 years. So the kind of internships that I did when I was a student were the following. I worked at the U.S. Embassy as an intern in the consular section. Now, what is the relation of that with public policy? Not much, right? But I went to my manager and I asked her, is there anything I can do apart from the tasks that I'm expected that I can come up with and you'd allow me to do? She's like, you name it, we do it. And she allowed me to work with her on this cable about Qatari medical tourism in the United States, where we got a set of data from the State Department and we had to do a full analysis on the numbers that would advise the U.S. government on how to devise better policies to cater to the needs of Qatari patients coming from Qatar. And at that time, I had no idea what I was doing, but it kind of gave me some perspective. You know, it made me understand how some numbers can work in a certain context. What is a cable? Why is it written? How will it be delivered to the other receiving end? Another internship I did was at the Qatar Financial Center and Regulatory Authority, where we had to research about international regulations on trade embargoes with Russia and Iran and so on. I was a freshman. I had no idea what I was doing. But looking back, it was tied to policies in one way or another. I then tried to take everything as it came, whether I could land my perfect internship or not, because it's not about the name of the institution or the title of the internship itself. It's more about those transferable skills you get. And it's very important to be open with your managers and play around with things, move them around. If you have a certain set of tasks that you have to do, can you transform at least one of these to something that you're interested into? Maybe you cannot, because such are the sorts of tasks that you have to do. But maybe there's ample space for you to work on a separate paper that is not related to your day-to-day tasks. That built me up. And again, it contributed to what I love the most, and it's a mantra for me in life. Just think outside of the box, you know? Now, looking back, I can narrate a story about what I was doing and who I was. And that narration of the story helped me also land the job that I'm doing right now at Georgetown. Evidently, the fact that I worked in the office as a student assistant also did come as a great advantage. However, the kind of responsibilities you have as a student assistant are extremely limited compared to a full-time employee, not only because of confidentiality issues, but also because of your skill set. You are a fresh starter. You need to learn a lot. You might have a good small insight on the main idea on how the department works. And as a student assistant, you'd also know, but it's a completely different deal. And what got me the job was knowing the term policies in different contexts, having seen it applied again in different contexts and bringing it together in the higher education system context, because that's what I do on a day-to-day basis. It's definitely a very tough time to navigate in terms of the job market, but every generation says the same. My brother is 4 years older. He says that we have it way easier than them for some reason. My cousin, who's 17, says, oh, it's going to be hellish when time comes for us. But things change, you know, things move. You learn new things. And jobs as a concept have changed drastically. You know, the kind of job I'm doing today, it was done completely different 30 years ago, you know. And the same applies to everything that Absolutely. You want to do. So be up to date with what is out there. And while you are a student, when you think about your employment after 4 years, well, it depends. You might not get lucky. It might take a year. It might take 6 months. For some of my friends, it took 1.5 years to get their first job. But now they're doing an amazing job at whatever they're doing. They're enjoying it. They're getting experience. They did have to wait, but there's not much you can do about it. And I'm also, you know, very open to the idea that what I have right now might come to an end very soon. And I might have to go back to Albania and start from zero. But I'm okay with that because what I've done has built me enough confidence in myself that I don't know everything, but I can learn.
Yeah. I mean, you said it perfectly. Like, I really think, I really want to go back. Every time anyone says anything, I go back to what you said about Aya, about you're going to have to do it. It's going to happen. So just suck it up and do it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think with the job market, that's like particularly true. Like that's especially true with the job market because, you know, it's not easy. Finding that perfect job for you or like even a job, it's not going to be simple. It's not going to be straightforward for most of us, at least. Honestly, like it's going to happen, whether it's now, whether it's a year and a half from now, whether it's hopefully not more than that, but could be, you know, like the thing is just put your head down and get to work, do it because Georgetown has given you, we can't give you like a job right out the bat, but it has given us the skills, the character built up, the methods to navigate the job market and even the resources to like look for a job. You know, they've been working on getting career coaches, getting like job databases, stuff like that. So, you know, it's going to happen. Just as students, like our job is to just chase it.
Yeah, but I would also say don't be fixated on a certain idea or a certain job title or a certain company.
Yeah. Like,
I think one of the things I've learned throughout the past 6 years of my life, including Georgetown before and now, is expect the unexpected and accept that whatever happens will happen.
Yeah.
And it's good for you because one door closes, another window opens. You might think that just because I didn't land this job that was the job of my dreams, life is over for me now while I'm 22, 3, 24, 25, and oh my God, I'm desperate. I understand that for a lot of people, me having a job and saying that might seem like just a privileged thought, but I'm at the end of the day an international as well, and I've tried, you know, being unemployed for some time, and I understand that we all have responsibilities. Locals, Qataris, internationals, everyone in this life has their own responsibilities, but again, you have to try different things.
It's a station.
It's a station.
It's like you said.
If it does not work out right away, straight away, then maybe try something else. And of course, I think people at the careers office and at the alumni office are way better equipped at guiding people on how to better train their people skills, how to be better at networking while they're still students. I didn't ace that. It wasn't, you know, let's say my strongest suit during those 4 years. But for some people, it did work out and it did take them places. As always, you have to do most of the work yourself. Other people are there just to give you a little push or a tap in the back. But try different resources and don't get discouraged by LinkedIn posts.
Oh, please. It's all fake. It's worse than Instagram.
Just because someone goes out there who is super thrilled and happy and excited to tell us about this amazing job and honored to get the job of their dreams or having been served the honor of being accepted in this internship. Good for them. But you have to wait for your own, you know, as Arabs say, risk. Like, you have to wait for what is meant for you. And I don't just mean that by, you know, sit and wait. But have faith that hard work coupled with the right people who see the right things in you will make it work out in the right way at the right time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and one thing I would say is there's no recipe or a manual or exact steps that you follow that will guarantee you a job. Nothing does. Everyone's journey is different. I wouldn't say it's luck, but circumstances are different. It's about being in the right place, right time, having right skills. But it's not a ready expectation. And no one can tell you this is what you need to do to get a job.
Yeah.
You know, because it never works like that. And personally, I'm someone who, since I started uni, at least after COVID, I was never not employed or I was never not working. And up until now, I would still say, I have no idea what I want to do. You know, I can't say, like, people would ask me, oh, what do you want to do? What, like, even like, what do you see yourself doing after school? Blah, blah, blah. And I never had an answer. But one thing is, I gave everything a shot. One thing I would say, be delusional. Apply for every job position that you find, even if you think you're unqualified, even if you think that you don't fit any of the requirements. Applying literally takes 5 minutes. So do that. Like, I personally, I worked in comms. I worked in media production. I tried entertainment. I did museums. I did research. I did things that were very corporate. Did NGOs. So, like, not two jobs I had looked the same. I tried everything that I could do. And some of them I loved. Some I hated. Some I tolerated. But at the end, it's not about what you do. It's just about being in a professional environment. Mm. And that is how you gain the actual skills.
And different environments.
Yes, and you can, and I would say even after doing these like 12 internships, 6 full-time jobs, I wouldn't even say that after that I knew what I wanted to do. But I knew what I didn't want to do. And that is a step closer to getting there.
But also I feel like, you know, when you graduate and you're applying for full-time jobs, or maybe internships at the hope that you'll get a full-time offer in return. Being at this age, which means not much professional experience for a lot of people, straight out of college and with the specific Georgetown School of Foreign Service in Qatar degree,
as of us.
There's certain expectations for good and for bad from managers and employers, right? Mm-hmm. And what I mean to say by that is that you will never have the perfect profile for any job that you're applying to. Like, there's people from all around the world most probably applying for that job, but exclude the world, even if you think in the context of EC, the pool is so diverse. Mm-hmm. So the way you can help yourself, and this is something that has worked out really well for me and friends of mine, is that although you do not trust this while you're in the process, it's more about your attitude than it is about what you have done. Nobody expects you to be an accountant, a diplomat, a scientist, a political scientist or whatever when you knock on the first, you know, day of your job at your door, of your manager's door, and you're like, hi, I want to start working. They don't expect you to be that because it's not reasonable or sound for you to be that. But what they want to see, and I can fully attest to this after a year of full-time working experience, and I'm pretty sure other alumni who have been Hoya alumni for many more years would be able to explain it better. It is about that attitude, because guess what? You don't know much about what you're doing. You learn on the go. You'll make a lot of mistakes. Hopefully, things that you can fix. You don't want to destroy your corporate. But if they like your attitude, they will help you grow and they will recommend you. They will, you know, put you in touch with other people. Georgetown doesn't have to be the place where everything happens while you're at it.
Yeah.
Georgetown can make things happen for you
later on,
even after you've left the building and you have gained the experience, the mentality, the attitude, the work discipline, and that kind of open-minded perspective that, for as long as you learn, and of course make a living wage, which is always good to make, you're good to go. You're going to figure it out.
Yeah, and one last thing I would say is, they don't just hire you based on your resume. Like, your resume is a big part of your application. It gets you there, gets you to the interview, but it does not necessarily get you the job.
And it doesn't keep you at the job either.
And it doesn't keep you in the job either. So yes, having a 3-page resume is cool. Would probably get you a call or, hey, when would you be free to pop in? But after that, it's completely on you.
You.
Who you are. What your attitude is.
If you can handle
your
skill, yourself.
And it becomes deeper than your... It's a lot deeper than your technical skills.
Yeah.
It's about your social skills, you know.
Can how you interact with time?
People. How you communicate. You know, your work ethic. And these are all things that you can gain without necessarily getting that prestigious internship or that, you know. These are things that you can... And while being a student, these are things that you just learn from your everyday life.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing I would say that applying to all these jobs, maybe it did not always give me the job, but it taught me when I get in that room with those people, how to make myself sound like the better option. You know, it's all about having these social skills and knowing how to carry yourself and presenting yourself as someone who's eager to learn, who has that work ethic, who it's okay to admit that I've never done this before. Chances are most of the jobs that you do
you haven't be
things
done
that,
before.
Things that exactly. You know nothing about. The amount of times I applied for jobs and then I had to Google the job title and be like, what does a blah, blah, blah do? Are countless.
Product manager.
That is literally what you do. You know, you would be like, what is logistics? But that's just really how it is.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be open to the idea that you won't know if you like it or not. Sometimes you don't have to like it, but just do it whenever you can.
And honestly, like, I wish this wasn't like so much of an issue for people growing up, because I mean, let's assume you're graduating at like 22 or 23. Bro, like, give yourself the space to try stuff. Give yourself the space to fail. Like, we're so young.
If
please.
Not now, then when? Would
exactly.
Like, fail at 40?
Absolutely.
And there's no deadline. I know that there's this very... Because I had that too. Like, I always had a timeline of, okay, I'm going to graduate by 21. I'm going to have a job. You know, I'm going to be have a junior position by the time I'm 23. By 25, I'm going to be an executive. By 28, I'm going to retire by 35 and make a lot of money. You know, but it's really not real. I know people who graduated at 28. I know people who graduated at 19, you know, but your age has nothing to do with where you end up. And one thing I would say, yes, success is cool and it's nice to have. But I know this sounds cheesy, but personal fulfillment is where it's at. And that's what you actually need, because if you have that success very early on, you will end up getting to that burnout, you know. And you and need to end up finding the balance between doing something that you want to do and something you like doing that pays you well, you know, and it's difficult. And that's generally something that you won't find in your first 5 years as a working person. It takes time to get to that point where you're stable, you're settled, and you're satisfied with
and
what
you
you're
know
doing.
What you want.
And you know what you want. And it's okay to not know what you want.
Yeah.
Try everything, you know.
I think... I would like to take advantage of the fact that, you know, we're here and recording this podcast, and maybe it's going to reach out more people than we think, or maybe even less than we would like. But I would like for more alumni to get on board and talk, just share what's the kind of stress they've gone through.
Yeah.
What's the kind of, you know, failures and success stories that they went through. What did it take for them to make it to where they are right now? Employees who've graduated 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 1 year ago. I don't care how old they are.
Absolutely.
I highly respect experience at whatever age or stance of life. But I feel like that is one thing I feel like the community lacks, the alumni community. I would have wished to have seen more people come back on campus and reflect on their life 5, 10, 15, 2 years ago and be like, well, that's fine. You know, there's so many gazillions of ways that this can unfold that you don't even have to worry about because there's nothing you can do about
Absolutely.
It. You know, you give it Absolutely. Your best these 4 years and then you just hope for the best.
Yeah.
And you keep on working until the thing works out. But we have so many success stories that I am not even aware of. I hear from other friends of mine, oh, I met with this Hoya who's doing this amazing job at this institute.
That's so
I met
true.
With another amazing Hoya who's top executive in this other corporate. And I don't even know that these people exist. Sure, to a certain extent, it's due to my own lack of, you know, research and network and da-da-da. But I would also like them to kind of give back to the people. It doesn't have to be something coming from the institution, from the alumni office. How about they, you know, we just
come
in a Zoom meeting and just talk to people who are freshmen, you know, even if it's just 10 minutes of your time. But in many cases, we do not realize how impactful just sharing the personal can be. It is this personal story that got us in Georgetown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is that personal story that's going to carry us in whatever journey we embark on. So sharing that is the biggest favor we can do to one another because it gives you perspective that it's going to be fine. If it was fine for so many graduates, hundreds of graduates, well, it better be fine for me as well. But please, and I mean this from my heart, to whoever is listening to this, I need to talk to these people. And I'm pretty sure people who are still in school in Georgetown need to talk to these people. We just need to get some perspective from each other. Yeah. Let us know, how did you make it work? How did you fail? How did you get up? And what's your piece of advice? Just say it out there.
Yeah, I wish someone told me in my earlier years of Georgetown that we okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't always okay, but you end up fine.
But it will be.
At some point, you know.
And it would be so impactful if like an alumni does it. You
yes,
know?
But if it's not enough if you hear it only once, you know. Yeah. Like even if 500 people come to you per day and say it, most probably you won't believe it, but you will remember that you heard it.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes you start believing things
in yourself.
Yes, because you have to in yourself, you know. So if that's the mechanism with which you have to cope, I don't see a problem in that.
You know what? Khalas, we need to talk to Thanos about this.
Thanos, you're being called out.
Yeah. We are calling you out. Okay. That was actually, I think that was really good, especially about the job stuff. I want you guys to try one of these because you guys did such a great job in the last 5 minutes.
What do you do? How do you know?
You don't. That's the thing. Oh, nice.
That sounds like
you
me.
Know, we should have gotten the hang of this in the beginning.
Yeah. Just
go ahead, Yeta.
Let's go.
Nice.
That's
so not
Yeta. Yeah, that's it doesn't.
Your
representative of
Mike. Because I was like, mine sounds like me. Like,
wait, I'm gonna try this one.
That sounds like you.
Yeah.
Down.
History major, people.
He has a job, by the way.
I do. I mean,
yeah. Do the iconic. I'm a history major and I have a job.
Actually, you know what? I'm gonna do that, guys. I'm a history major and I have a job. That was actually
you, Omar.
Thank you. Yeah, there's last thing, because people asked about it. It's actually the tea part of the session. Mm-hmm. But we'll make it quick, but we're going to indulge you guys. Some people have been asking, you know, if Georgetown is an environment, you know, as opposed to what I've been saying for an hour, if Georgetown is an environment where like you put other people down, and some of this actually, like some have mentioned like specific incidents, like the speed dating episode. It was pretty controversial at the time.
Okay, about the speed dating.
Yeah, let's do it
Let's do it in a very speedy way.
Yeah.
That wasn't the first time a speed dating event happened. And I understand that people took it very literally, you know, to that it's actually we're putting people together to do whatever the name indicates. But mind you, generally, when someone hears speed dating, what they think is just means that you talk to people in a very fast pace where you switch from person to person. And I know with that event, and I know exactly that it was mostly the younger batches who had the biggest problem with it because to them it was very new. And I understand that. But mind you also, like, when I saw it, I didn't think anything of it because I was like, we always had stuff like that.
Yeah,
you
like know? We know it's lame.
Like, this isn't new. We know that it just means that we're going to have to sit in tables and shift from one to another.
And talk in French.
And talk in French or, like, be friends or whatever it is. But I would say having cultural awareness is important. And I understand there are a lot of things surrounding that event that made it that controversial. At the end, we have to take into account where we're at, what the country that we're in, and blah, blah, blah. But at the end, one thing I would say, it's really not that big of a deal. You know, I know people made it. Things like this do not define an institution or define the people that are in it.
Or the Georgetown experience.
Or the Georgetown experience. And one thing I would say is that if you see something that you don't understand, don't jump into attacking it.
Yeah.
You know, try to understand it first. Because I know that most of the people that were talking on it were people that just saw the poster. You know? Mm. But, which means because that the whole controversy thing didn't even happen on the day that the event happened. People started talking about it a few days after. Because if you saw the event at the atrium, it looked like any other event. It didn't even look like anything. You just saw people talking in French, having croissants, you know, was really not that deep. But just don't jump into attacking. Understand. If you don't understand, ask. If you are not there, one thing I would also say, it's okay to abstain from having an opinion sometimes. You know, you don't have to have an opinion on everything and hate
exactly
on
what
everything.
I'm about to do.
You know? Because, so like, it's...
I know you're Georgetown students, but it's okay. Like, you get the pass.
You don't have to attack everything. You know, it's not that deep.
Okay. Flash round. Aya, do you have any regrets?
Any regrets? Yes, I wish I did more and I was more present.
Okay, deeper than I thought it would be. Okay, yeah, Todd, do you have any regrets?
Not really.
Yeah?
I wish I would have spent some more time with my friends because I wasn't very present on campus. Due to the internships, the other jobs, the NGO, all of these important quote-unquote excuses.
Mm.
But I wish I had spent some more time with some of my friends that I got closer with in the later years. But other than that, no, because it was a very colorful kind of experience, you know. Yeah. And I'm
That's
a firm
sweet.
Believer of that cheesy perspective, you know, that if it didn't happen, then I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So I think I experienced everything I had to experience as a Georgetown student. If I were to go back, I would have asked for some more help and I would have been more of a pain to Dean Moot and other people.
Shout out.
Yeah, but you know what? It was a beautiful journey with its good and bad days. And I've said this in my Tropia speech that Georgetown has radically changed who I am as a scholar, as a person, primarily due to its people.
Mm.
And the bonds I've created with people that I am, you know, family kind of close to now, or even those that are just friends or acquaintances, I love it. They've changed me and I owe it to them for having changed me in their own nice, sweet or not that sweet kind of ways. I'll just very briefly touch on the question about people putting other people down in Georgetown. It does happen.
Yeah. I mean,
more often than we would like to admit it or acknowledge it or even be okay with it. But one thing I think people have to kind of admit while they're in this stage of life is that other people's opinions should not affect you. If you are allowing it to them to, you know, badmouth you, to talk behind your back, to say things that are not nice and pleasant that they wouldn't otherwise say in front of your face.
Yeah.
It's not of your problem. So why are you making it your own problem and feeling bad about it?
Like, you have power over this.
Absolutely.
Do you?
Do you? And not everyone has to like you. To be honest,
That's
many
okay.
people in my batch didn't even know me up until the fourth year and when I ran for the Tropia speech. And not to boast about it, because of course I would have loved everyone to, you know, be like, hey, Yeta, how are you? You look cool, or I am cool, you know, on their end. But it's fine because that didn't define me. I decided myself who I was and what I was going to do. And I really hope more people come to see that. I know we come in to Georgetown at different ages, different life stages, different perspectives and experiences. But the main takeaway is you're here to challenge your own self, to build your own self. If you want others to support you and accompany you in the journey, perfect. If it doesn't serve that purpose, then let it out, sweetheart. Let it go, because you have better things to do. You have most probably like 5 papers to write for the deadline on Sunday. So, you know, you can make use of your time in better ways.
Go do them. Yeah, exactly.
And also don't be prey to bullying. Mm-hmm. It can happen very easily in such a, you know, eloquent group of people who really know how to talk their way in and out of things.
We're not above
if
it.
If you're not that witty, you might find yourself stuck.
Yeah.
Don't engage. Ignoring such things is the best policy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Honestly, like all of that was beautifully put. One especially last thing, the first part.
Embrace the Hoya Saxa spirit. I would say that is a regret that I didn't have. And learn the fight song.
For sure. And go to CEP.
Yes.
I have a personal mission to spread awareness, the community engagement program. I absolutely am a firm believer that the other programs, you know, the Women as Change Makers, the Zones of Peace and Zones of Conflict, everything that is out there is a must. You should give it a try.
Go to all the trips.
CEP, though.
But CEP...
Escape as well. But
will fundamentally build you and mark you and define you as a Hoya. It teaches you what they mean here about community for others, people for others, community and diversity. There's no better way through which you can really internalize those, you know, Jesuit values that we see in the walls of Georgetown. And it's also a cool program, man. You're building something, a house, a gas tank. You're like, I feel like Hulk, and I'm also Socrates by the night, you know?
Yeah, I agree to that. Do CEP. It fundamentally changed who I am as a person. Wow. I recently went to CEP.
It's not a cult, we promise.
It's not. But I recently went in May to Kenya. It was an amazing program. I got to talk and meet students who have always been students with me, but I never met or talked to. I got closer to a lot of the staff members, and it just really changed who I am as a person. And this is where the whole embrace the Hoya Saxa spirit stems from. That's what I would say I learned on that trip, that you are part of a community, you know, and you see it more when you and other people from the Georgetown community exist in a completely different community that's foreign to all of you.
You see how much you have to give.
So you see how much you have to give, and you see how close you are to each other. You know, this is something that you're doing together, and you're all doing it from the spirit exists. You know, I used to think the whole Hoya Saxa thing was cheesy.
I was about to say, I didn't think you'd say this.
Everyone says that. But by the end of that trip, I was yelling Hoya Saxa on the bus back home, you know, and it's a great experience, and it brought me closer to Georgetown as a concept, as an idea, as a space, and it significantly increased the value of Georgetown to me.
That's amazing.
Guys, do things together and do debriefings after you things together. I met 2 of my friends, Musa and Wakar, in June, I think, in Dubai at Wakar's place. And we hadn't seen each other since last year. There was a lot of for us to catch up on. And we're talking and we're complaining about how clueless we are about our life in the next few years. We have no idea where we're going with our jobs and with our education and so on. And then this is a very personal story, but I'm going to share it because whoever has gone to CEP will understand it. At the end of the conversation around 5 a.m. and we're going to depart at 10 a.m. on the same day, Musa goes like, Yeta, doesn't this feel like a debriefing to you? And I'm like, my God, it does. Those debriefing sessions just bring you down to earth, remind you to be grateful for where you are, and ignite that sense of community. It's not about the institution or about the policies or the system. It's about the people. You are the institution. I am the institution.
We're all part of the system.
If we want to make a change, however cheesy again that might sound or hopeful or idealistic, I fundamentally believe that it can come. If two people come together on the same idea and go talk about it to like-minded people, or at least try to change someone else's perspective on it, Georgetown will be a way better place. And yeah, guys, CEP is the place. That's where you will get encouraged to go and change the world in other dimensions that Georgetown has ever shown to you before.
Yep. That's amazing.
Are you ready to change the world?
Very.
She will. I will. Okay, I'm going to adopt that, by the way, the debriefings. But okay, that was amazing. To all you listeners out there, thank you for listening. We will see you at the next alumni gathering, if we make it. Hoya Saksa, make the most out of it, please. It's 4 amazing years. Just do everything you can do. And till next time, this was GEQ Speaks.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of GEQ Speaks. We hope you've gained valuable insights and inspirations from our conversation today. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to follow us on our Instagram page at GEQ_speaks, and be sure to leave a review on Spotify to show your support.